This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
It's been more than 20 years since the Parliament of Canada enacted the Corrections and Conditional Release Act, which allows the Correctional Service of Canada to enhance Aboriginal community involvement in corrections. The hope was that Corrections Canada would be better able to respond to the unique needs and circumstances that contribute to high incarceration rates for Aboriginal people. But a report issued by the Correctional Investigator of Canada, Howard Sapers, says that disparities in opportunities and outcomes between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal offenders continue to widen. Mr. Sapers says that close to one in four inmates in federal penitentiaries today are of Aboriginal ancestry. But Aboriginal-specific legislative provisions are chronically underfunded, underutilized, and unevenly applied by the Correctional Service. In failing to fully meet Parliament's original intent, Sapers' review concludes that the federal correctional system perpetuates conditions of disadvantage for Aboriginal people in Canada. The director of British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, in his response to the Correctional Investigator's report, stated that these findings come as no surprise, and we see constant examples of this discrimination through our work in communities all over British Columbia. Canada's unjust over-imprisonment of Indigenous people at federal and provincial prisons alike must be put to an end.
I spoke with Howard Sapers earlier this week and began by asking him for some background on the Corrections and Conditional Release Act, which provides the basic legislative framework for this discussion.
The background for your report is the Corrections and Conditional Release Act. It's federal legislation that passed more than 20 years ago. Tell us about that.
The Corrections and Conditional Release Act is the federal law that governs correctional practice in Canada. It was proclaimed into law in 1992 after about a 10-year period of study to bring correctional law in line with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. There were many innovations in the legislation in 1992, including a statement of principles for corrections at the very beginning, and then a number of specific sections dealing with Aboriginal issues. Two of those sections were the subject of our recent investigation, Section 81, which allows the Crown to enter into negotiations with Aboriginal communities to run healing lodges or an alternate place of custody, and Section 84, which allows for Aboriginal communities to be involved in the release plan and supervision of Aboriginal offenders when they're returning to their home communities.
Now, your report concludes that the federal correctional system perpetuates conditions of disadvantage for Aboriginal people in Canada. What did you find?
Well, what we found is that there is tremendous overrepresentation of Aboriginal men and women in federal penitentiaries. Today, Aboriginal numbers in total are about 23% of the total federal population. That's nearly one in four. For Aboriginal women, it's even a higher number. It's 33%, fully a third of women in federal custody are of Aboriginal descent. These numbers have gone up quite dramatically, in fact, over 40% in the last 5 years. And there are long-documented reasons why there is a disproportionate number of Aboriginal men and women in negative contact with our justice system. This is the long shadow of failed policies of assimilation, reservations, residential schools, denied economic participation, lower participation and success rates in post-secondary education. So the report did not really study the reasons why there is this history of disadvantage, but we do know that that history of disadvantage has been documented by the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People. It's been referred to in Supreme Court of Canada decisions, most notably in the Glandu decision from 1999, and it's pretty well accepted that policies and initiatives need to be adjusted to take this reality into account when dealing with Aboriginal men and women who are in conflict with the law.
You mentioned two sections, Section 81 on agreements with Aboriginal communities and Section 84, which has to do with release planning. What did you find particularly with respect to what's happening right now with those two areas?
Well, Section 84, which is the section that allows the government to enter into negotiations with Aboriginal communities to run healing lodges, was really put into place to transfer some responsibility for care and custody to Aboriginal communities. In the last 20 years, there have only been four such agreements successfully negotiated. Those four agreements only collectively account for 68 beds. Those 68 beds would only service about 2% of the Aboriginal population currently in federal custody. There are no Section 81 agreements in Canada's north, none in British Columbia, none in Ontario, and none in the Atlantic region. This is an insufficient and inadequate use of Section 81, and it's in spite of the fact that the Correctional Service of Canada was given millions of dollars earmarked to help facilitate Section 81 agreements. When it comes to Section 84, this is the section for release planning and supervision, we found that there's a tremendous amount of confusion around what Section 84 releases are about. We found a lack of understanding about the Gladue principles as they were enunciated by the Supreme Court of Canada and how they should be applied to release planning for offenders. We found inconsistent and insufficient training around Aboriginal cultural and spiritual issues. And we found that there were only 12 Aboriginal community development officers whose job it is to facilitate these Section 84 agreements. There's only 12 in the whole country, and that's out of a workforce of about 19,000. As a result of that, we noted that in the last 5 years, the number of releases made pursuant to Section 84 has declined by 50%.
You mentioned that you found limited understanding of Aboriginal people, culture, approaches to healing within corrections. And I noted in the information I read, it was especially among frontline staff and facilities. Can you give us some examples of this?
Well, we found that there was an inconsistent appreciation of the role that elders play. We found that there was some suspicion around some Aboriginal ceremony, particularly the importance of sweats and smudging. We found that there was a lack of appreciation around the significance of some tradition, including presentation of tobacco. And we even found that there was an inappropriate response to offenders who were coming into the institution with medicine bundles. So just a whole host of issues that we feel the Correctional Service of Canada can improve their awareness and their sensitivity around.
What are your recommendations?
Well, we'd like to see a much more robust implementation of Sections 81 and 84, and that would include more appropriate resourcing, hiring of more staff whose job it is to make sure those sections are implemented, more and improved staff training around Aboriginal awareness issues. And we've also recommended, once again, this is not the first time, once again we recommended that the Correctional Service of Canada needs a Deputy Commissioner for Aboriginal Corrections. The service must change its governance approach to ensure that there is one senior executive who is solely and exclusively responsible for fully implementing the Aboriginal Corrections agenda and strategy and being accountable for results in the implementation of that program.
Now, the Correctional Service of Canada posted an online response to your report. What can you tell us about that response?
It's inadequate. If you read the response, you would come to the conclusion that the Correctional Service of Canada doesn't really think it has much of a problem. It agrees that Aboriginal corrections needs to be a corporate priority, but it would suggest that it has got that priority well in hand. In some, I find the response dismissive And we've asked the Correctional Service to go back and have another look. And in the absence of a more robust response, we'll be asking the minister to intervene and direct the service to pay more attention to the recommendations that were attached to our report.
You told the Globe and Mail that the problems related to First Nations, Métis, and Inuit offenders will only get worse if they're ignored. Is there any reason for optimism about potential change at this point?
Change in corrections is always painfully slow, and sadly, it's sometimes driven by crisis. I do think that when we're dealing with a carceral population of nearly one in four men or women of Aboriginal descent, and when we see the things that are happening in our federal institutions right now in terms of security incidents and crowding and decreases in conditional release, I think we're approaching that kind of critical mass of problems where things are going to have to change. And so that may not be the best grounds for optimism, but I think eventually we'll see some of our recommendations implemented, because the status quo just simply is unacceptable.
Mr. Sapers, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure.
That was Howard Sapers, Canada's correctional investigator. The correctional investigator is mandated by the Corrections and Conditional Release Act as an ombudsman for federal offenders. The primary function of the office is to investigate and bring resolution to individual offender complaints. The correctional investigator also has a responsibility to review and make recommendations on the correctional services policies and procedures associated with the areas of individual complaints to ensure that systemic areas of concern are identified and appropriately addressed.
The special report that Howard Sapers and I discussed is called Spirit Matters, Aboriginal People and the Corrections and Conditional Release Act. A full PDF copy of that report is available online. And Ashta, when I downloaded a copy, I noted that the report is dated October the 22nd, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Mr. Sapers why, if the final report is dated for late October 2012, it was only tabled in Parliament much later, on March the 7th, 2013. And of course, all of the media stories related to the report followed that March the 7th tabling.
Mm.
He told me that the report was written in the spring of 2011. And was submitted to Correctional Service of Canada for their review, which is the agreed-upon protocol. This allows the Correction Services to ensure that, from their perspective, there aren't any errors or omissions in these types of reports. Well, the response from Corrections Canada was so slow that the correctional investigator finally took the step of releasing his findings as a so-called special report, and that allowed it to be tabled in Parliament and to come to the attention of the Canadian public.
Sounds like there's a lot more work to be done around these issues. That was quite the time gap.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.